Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up in just a bit, we'll find out why scientists believe the threat of sea level rise could spell disaster for the folks living on Smith Island. We'll speak with WAMU environment reporter Jonathan Wilson about his two-part report on the future of the community. But first, on Tuesday, new gun laws will take effect in the state of Maryland, and gun enthusiasts and gun shop owners are downright angry about the changes, which, among other things, include a ban on dozens of kinds of guns. Handgun buyers will also have to submit fingerprints to the state police as part of the background check process. Bob Arthur owns Arthur's Shooter Supply Store in Berlin, Maryland. It's a large shed behind his house that's outfitted with a huge array of weaponry. Everything from handguns and rifles to semi-automatic weapons like AK-47s and AR-15s. Arthur believes the new laws are nothing more than a way for the government to tax gun owners and to have a comprehensive list of everyone who has guns in the state. And with the changes just days from being implemented, he says he's been slammed with people not only buying up new guns before the new law takes effect, but also people who are buying ammunition in bulk.
We started Shooter Supply about 5 years ago, and it was a tactical store. So we sold a lot of AR-15s, AK-47s, FALs, the neat, really fun types of weapons. And we've also got a full line of hunting and rifles and shotguns, and we carry a complete line of handguns also.
You know, when I was growing up, there was a gun in the house, but it was a handgun. And, you know, my grandfather had an arsenal of hunting rifles. He was an avid hunter. But when I was growing up, I didn't know anyone that had a semi-automatic weapon, and certainly nobody that I knew in the small country town that I lived in that felt that they needed that sort of weaponry for home defense. Why do you think that's changing?
Well, first of all, it's not that it's such a high-caliber weapon and a high-powerful weapon. AR-15 shoots a very small, tiny varmint round that's a 22 caliber, just like your 22 long rifle that all the kids shoot when they were young. Just has more powder behind it. In the last 50 years, semi-automatics have come a long way. So we're getting a lot of new folks into the sport of hunting and shooting. There's an application for semi-automatics in all different types of hunting.
Let's talk about the law. There's going to be a change. It's going to be harder for people to get weapons like what you sell in your store. Tell me what you think this law is going to mean for people who are not only gun owners, but people who are looking to increase the arsenal of weapons that they already have.
Right now, with the economy as bad as it is, there's no place to invest the money that you do make. You can't put money into real estate because real estate's dead. You can't put your money into the bank. There's no interest rates. The stocks and bonds are terribly low. But you could buy firearms or gold or silver or some other chattel that will increase in value. And it's a good investment.
The gun that's behind you here, the AR-15, retails for just under $1,100. So what you're saying is that in 10 years' time, if somebody wanted to sell that back or sell the gun, it would hold its value, yeah?
Yes, or increase normally.
So since the law passed, and obviously it's taking effect next week, but since the law passed, have you seen a huge uptick in people purchasing these weapons here in your store?
Ever since last November when the administration got reelected, there's been a big run on a run for guns. The ban, the federal ban that didn't get any traction, caused a large spike. The rest of the country is kind of flat now, but Maryland, with its new law just a week away, people are scrambling to get their funds together to go over and get these firearms that they're not going to be allowed to get. And the problem is, the law is not going to stop any crime. It's a horrible law, and it's just, beside the fact that it's unconstitutional, it's just keeping law-abiding citizens are the ones that are getting affected by this, not the criminals. They'll always get guns. They'll steal them or get them down the street.
And I've heard that as a sentiment from a lot of people who own guns and say, you know what, I'm a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. It's my constitutional right to have whatever kind of gun that is allowable by law. You mentioned earlier that people have been scrambling to get their funds together. Is it safe to say that in the past several months, you've been very busy here?
Oh, we've been extremely busy here. And across the state of Maryland, they've been very busy. They've done over, in regulated firearms, which would be handguns, and what Maryland calls an assault rifle, which is simply a semi-automatic rifle that's on a list. They've gotten over 100,000 applications at MSP. Now they're approximately 50-some thousand applications behind.
Wow.
They're supposed to be able to do these applications and get a background check done in 7 days. They're 5 months behind now.
So if I came in here today, let's say I was in the market and I wanted to purchase something, explain for people how that process of the background check and me getting a gun today would work versus what it's going to be like if I came in next Thursday.
Okay. There's two types of long guns in Maryland. That would be a rifle or a shotgun. There's ones that are over the counter that all you have to do is fill out one form. It's a federal form. It's 4473. We call NICS. They do an instant background check on you with the FBI. They'll either say proceed or denied, or they'll hold it so they have more time to investigate who the person is. But normally, folks can walk out the door that day with a rifle or a shotgun. These are no different than the assault weapons that Maryland says are bad. Now, if you want to get an assault weapon, and it's simply a gun that's on a list, there's lots of semi-automatic rifles and shotguns that are not on the list that you can have today. These additional ones that are regulated in Maryland, what you would have to do is fill out your 4473 federal form and then three additional forms for Maryland, at which time we fax that into the state of Maryland, state police, and they will go ahead and do a background check. They're supposed to do it in 7 days, sure. But they're just failing to do their job, and they're 5 months behind.
Do you think that the answer is more guns? Like, for instance, in Worcester County, they put an armed guard at every one of the public schools this year. Do you think that is the route that we need to be taking? More security, i.e. more guns, which has kind of been the NRA's approach.
There's a lot of different ways to look at what you just suggested. I do believe that there should be police officers at the schools because there's a lot of problems with domestic violence, a lot of divorces, a lot of people that aren't allowed to pick their kids up. And I know that there's been scuffles and incidents with parents. Now, whether or not somebody's going to go and do something horrific like they did before, it's going to happen. There's bad people out there. The question about more guns, yeah, more guns in the right hands can help people. There's been shootings at malls. There's been shootings at all kinds of different places. If the people had been armed that were there, they had probably had a pretty good chance of stopping it or slowing it down. I've lived here on this property for 20 years. I live and work here, so I really don't have the advantage of working somewhere else. I'm going to do this as long as I can, and I'll have to change some of the makeup of the products that we sell here. But, there's enough neat guns out there that aren't on the list that I'll be able to make out all right.
Bob, thanks so much and pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to head now to Smith Island in the Chesapeake Bay. It's probably best known to outsiders for the decadent, multi-layered Smith Island cakes it exports to other corners of Maryland. But this tiny piece of land, like other islands in the bay, is facing an uncertain future. Scientists say climate change and sea level rise could wipe Smith Island off the map in just a few generations' time. So how are residents responding to those predictions? And what, if anything, can the state of Maryland do to prevent them from coming true? WAMU's environment reporter Jonathan Wilson recently wrapped up a two-part series digging into those questions. He joins me now to talk more about Smith Island's future. Jonathan, thanks for joining us here in Coastal Connection.
Happy to be here, Brian.
So, Jonathan, for people who've never been to Smith Island, paint a picture of what the island is like and how people are making a living there.
Well, Brian, Smith Island sits in the Chesapeake Bay, of course. To get there from the mainland, it's about a 30-minute ferry ride from Crisfield. It has three small towns, Tylerton, Rhodes Point, and Ewell. That's where the main harbor is. On a map, it looks like a three-toed foot pointing south, if you will. Ewell is at the heel, which would be at the northernmost part of the island. There were a few tourists around, but quite honestly, there's not a whole lot to do for tourists. There are one or two restaurants, and one of the restaurants I saw was closed despite the open sign that was hanging in the window. You can rent a golf cart, and that's how many people get around the island because it's not very big, but you run out of roads to explore in about 20 minutes. That's indicative of one of the problems for Smith Island. There's a decline of the fishing business throughout the Chesapeake Bay and a decline of tourist activity on the island, meaning that the economic future of the island is at stake as well.
Jonathan, it sounds a lot like Tangier Island, which is a place just south of Smith Island that I visited last year. And a thing that I heard on Tangier Island was that the population there has really dwindled over the past few decades. So I guess, did you get that same sense on Smith Island?
A lot of people make comparisons between these two places. Tangier, of course, part of Virginia. Smith, part of Maryland. Now, I talk with Chris Park. He's a native Smith Islander who really breaks your heart when you talk to him about the island. He has a sense of sadness about what's happening to the island. He lives on the mainland now in Chrisfield for health reasons. He says when he was growing up in the 50s and 60s, there were 800 people on the island about. Right now, if you look at the census, the latest numbers for Smith Island, 276 people left on this island. A lot of this is tied to the decline of the fishing profession, as I've said. I did a story a little while ago on Maryland watermen. They have a similar problem of no young people going into that profession. Well, it's the same on Smith Island. There are young people just leaving the island because they have nothing to do there. Here is what Chris Parks had to say about population decline on Smith Island.
The demographics are that the average age of the population is mid to late 50s, I would guess, or could be as old as 60. Most of the young people are not staying on the island.
You know, Jonathan, let's talk a little bit about the potential impacts of climate change on Smith Island. What exactly are scientists predicting?
The science behind this is still a little bit uncertain, but conservative projections put sea level rise at 2 feet above current levels by the year 2050. Now, most of this island is just 3 feet above sea level. Ed Link is a professor from the University of Maryland who I talked to. He is the former chief scientist for the Army Corps of Engineers, and he's a world-renowned expert on sea level rise. He is just not optimistic about the future of Smith Island.
Environments like the Chesapeake Bay that have a lot of land that is close to sea level, in an environment of rising sea levels and perhaps stormier conditions, they're in for some bad times. And we need to start planning what is pragmatic to do about that right now.
So, Jonathan, when I've been here on the shore and I've talked to people about this subject, climate change, sea level rise, I get a sentiment about it being such a long-term projection that residents here who, you know, them and their families have been here for generations, they just can't seem to wrap their heads around it. So I guess the question is, how are the residents of Smith Island feeling and reacting to scientific predictions that are so dire for the future of their home?
Well, it may not surprise you, but this is very hard for most residents who I talk to accept. You hear a couple of common refrains. They say, the erosion's not as bad as people say, and in storms, we Smith Islanders actually do better than many coastal towns because we are an island and the water can drain away much faster. Here are two native Smith Islanders, Alan Marsh and Pam Del Duco, talking about whether Smith Island is in real danger of washing away anytime soon.
Not in my time. I won't see nothing like that. You know, we've been here for 400 years and probably a good couple hundred more left.
The island is no more affected by erosion than anywhere else along the Chesapeake Bay. For example, when the hurricane came through this last year, yes, we got tide here, but within the tide cycle, our flood water went out, whereas Chrisfield, the flood water was there for 2 weeks.
It is true that Chrisfield got it much worse in Superstorm Sandy, but Ed Link, he's the climate scientist from the University of Maryland, he says Smith Island was just lucky because of the particular path that this storm took. He says islands are also more exposed to high wave action in strong storms.
Jonathan, one of the things that you talked about in your reporting that I found really interesting was the idea of the state offering voluntary buyouts for residents who wanted to move to the mainland. Did that program ever go anywhere? And how did people respond when that program was kind of laid out in front of them?
A lot of people on the island reacted with indignation. Not everyone, but a majority. This is a community full of people who've survived on their own with little help, so it might make some sense that they're suspicious of government intervention. Now, these buyouts were voluntary and were aimed at older residents, but residents on the island are really worried about depopulation. So Carol Gilbert with the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, that was the agency that floated the plan, she says the reaction was natural. Here she is.
I do think it was not as well understood that they were very limited and very voluntary and aimed at vulnerable households that may have a need to locate to retirement housing or retirement home on the coast.
But importantly, Gilbert did not regard the buyout proposal as a mistake. She says, listen, these are what public hearings are for. We floated this option out there. The public reacted negatively, and we will move on.
We talked earlier about how Smith Island and Tangier Island in Virginia are often compared and have sort of similar predictions about their future and also similar paths and struggles that they're dealing with. Last year, officials in Virginia announced plans to build a seawall and a jetty to protect Tangier's Island Harbor. Has there been any discussion of doing something similar for Smith Island?
Well, of course, it's funny that you bring that up because I did talk to a lot of people on Smith Island who bring up Tangier Island the first time that you asked them about a seawall or doing anything to help Smith Island. And they are a little bit bitter that Tangier Island is getting this government help and they're not getting the same help from Maryland. Now, there have been many discussions over the past few decades about what to do to help Smith Island, and there is actually an approved Army Corps of Engineers project on the books. The problem is it remains unfunded. The state doesn't have the kind of money to spend on a population of just 270 people. The project would cost, at current estimates, about $20 million. Now, even if that money did materialize, Professor Ed Link from the University of Maryland, he's had experience with projects in places like New Orleans, Texas, and even the Netherlands. And he said leaders should be cautious with these types of projects because you're likely to have to spend even more money maintaining and improving and even adding to these seawalls or breakwaters or whatever you choose to build for years to come. Here's what he had to say.
Galveston, Texas, had built a 17-foot high seawall to deal with hurricanes. And as Wright came right back a decade or so later and had to make it higher and had to make it longer. So I've never seen any of these things built that didn't have a brother or sister coming down the road.
Overall, did you get a sense that Smith Island is a priority for officials in Maryland? And I guess, do you anticipate any major program or initiative to try and save the island in the months or even the years to come?
Well, my sense is that this is a problem that is definitely on the radar of state leaders, and they're very sensitive about it. I had a difficult time getting them, nailing them down on exactly what's planned for Smith Island, what has been proposed. They want to be very careful about talking about this problem and, you know, not offending a very sensitive population even further, because this is a difficult situation for a community that's been in this on this island for so many years. But if I had to predict or give my sense of what's going to happen, it's going to be very difficult to get everybody to agree on the solution for Smith Island, whether it is too late to do anything, and to get everybody to come together to get state, federal, and local support to raise the money to do anything meaningful to save the island anytime soon.
We've been speaking with WAMU's environment reporter, Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, thank you for joining me here on Coastal Connection.
It's been a pleasure.
To hear both parts of Jonathan's series on Smith Island, click to our website, WAMUcoast.org. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo.